Welcome to Hit the Mark, a podcast presented by CK Magic Sports, who along with Man and Dog Productions, we are the first in sports education.
Welcome to Hit the Mark and part three of our 2015 New York Jets season preview and team history. The first two parts we looked at everything from Joe Namath to Walt Michaels, all the way up through Eric Mangini. So in part three, we're going to look at the Rex Ryan era and how that led up to the 2015 season and the new Mike Maccagnan, Todd Bowles era. Then we'll also look at the Jets season this year and what we can reasonably expect from the team that practices over in Floral Park. So when we come back, we will continue with part three of our Jets 2015 season preview and team history, and a look at the Rex Ryan era.
Richardson lined up as the fullback. Going to Jones. Jones has the first down, and the Jets are now on their way to Indianapolis.
A remarkable first season for Rex Ryan and the Jets.
It is. They established an identity with the Jets. That defense will only get better next year.
Sanchez backpedals. What will be the final play of their season. Jones down at the 45, and this one's over.
The Indianapolis Colts are the AFC champions.
It looks like this team played with anger all day. Why, Bart?
For all you non-believers, disrespect us. Talk crap about the defense like we ain't the third best defense in the league. All we hear is about their defense. They can't stop a nosebleed. 25th in the league, and we the one to get disrespected.
Congratulations. See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
Second and goal from the four. Tomlinson shifts to the right. Sanchez looks left. He's got his man. And it's a touchdown. Cotchery has it for the Jets. The Jets have scored 18 unanswered. It's a one-score difference at 24-19. Third down coming up. What do you expect here, Phil?
It could be, the Steelers could run a quarterback draw, but there's so many defenders inside, it's probably not going to work. Five wide receivers looks like they're going to throw it.
Interesting.
Surprise.
Yeah. And they are looking throw now. Roethlisberger in trouble, throws it, and what a catch! A catch to clinch it. In all likelihood, Brown, who had the big one last week, the long gainer to set up the winner, this time picks up the first down.
And Rex Ryan knows that's it.
One more, and it's official. The Pittsburgh Steelers are the AFC champions.
Just a little playoff montage of the Rex Ryan era, starting with the impressive win over the 13-3 San Diego Chargers in 2009 AFC divisional playoffs, and ending with the Jets' loss in the 2010 AFC championship game with Pittsburgh. So, in 2008, the Jets failed to reach the postseason after falling apart in the final games of the Brett Favre, Eric Mangini era. So in comes Rex Ryan, and Woody Johnson wanted a different coach than what Eric Mangini was. Mangini was a real control freak, so Johnson decided to go with more of a player's coach in hiring Rex Ryan. So the former defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, who had just reached the AFC Championship game in 2008, Ryan was a highly sought-after commodity. Actually, he thought he was going to get the job with the Baltimore Ravens, but they chose to go with John Harbaugh instead. So, Ryan, with his bravado and tough talk, made an immediate impact on New York, announcing that he was not going to kiss Bill Belichick's rings in his first press conference that introduced him to the media. So along with Ryan, the Jets also drafted their quarterback of the future in 2009 of the 2009 draft when they traded up to draft USC quarterback Mark Sanchez. Now with Sanchez and Ryan aboard, the Jets opened strong. winning their first three games, including a 16-9 victory over the hated Patriots and Tom Brady, snapping an 8-game home losing streak against them. However, after that, the Jets suffered losses in 6 of their next 7 games, and they sat at 4-6 and looked like anything but a playoff team at that point. They were falling apart at the end of games. They lost a game to Miami that they led late. They lost a game to the Jaguars that they led late. Then another disaster against Miami where they allowed 2 kickoff returns to Ted Ginn. So anyway, they're sitting at 4-6, okay, and it looks like the season isn't going anywhere. But at that point, they rallied to win 3 straight, and they were on their way to a 4th straight against the Falcons when once again the early season inability to finish out a game struck, and they lost as the Matt Ryan-led Falcons scored a touchdown in the final minute to defeat the Jets. So in the post-game news conference, or the press conference, I should say, not news conference, press conference, Rex Ryan kind of, gave up on the season or admitted that their playoff chances were all but over. He was pretty sad, and dejected that the Jets once again couldn't stop a team from scoring in the final minute, despite playing a great defensive game all game. However, Ryan was wrong, and the Jets were not eliminated from playoff contention. He conceded that they were actually mathematically eliminated, but they weren't. So upon finding them out, Ryan was relieved, and so were actually all Jet fans. So what had happened was there was a misunderstanding in the playoff scenarios. Then actually the Patriots, I forget what had happened that changed the scenarios, but within the 4 o'clock games, that the Jets looked like they were being eliminated from the postseason changed. And suddenly the Jets held their postseason chances in their own grasp. So they controlled their own destiny, all right? However, one of the wins that they would have in the final 2 games of the season was defeating the undefeated Indianapolis Colts, who were 14-0, all right? And then they would then finish up the season at home against the Bengals, who were also playoff bound and were getting ready to win the AFC North. So it's not like the Jets had 2 gimmies, okay? But anyway, they catch a big break because the Colts, after taking a lead 15-10 in the second half, decide to pull their starters and decide that a perfect season is not in the cards and they really want to rest Peyton Manning and rest the rest of their starters and kind of be ready for the postseason. So they pull all their starters, and thanks to Manning sitting down and Curtis Painter coming in, the Jets then outscore the Colts 19-0 the rest of the way. And then the following week, they just manhandle the Cincinnati Bengals, who themselves were kind of preparing for the playoffs. They had nothing to play for other than they would might rather play the Houston Texans in the first round instead of the New York Jets. I forgot how it worked out, but they would have either gotten the Texans or the Baltimore Ravens in the first round. They decided that they wanted the Jets. So they proceed to get absolutely annihilated by the Jets, 37-0, in what turned out to be the final game at the Meadowlands. But anyway, that just happened to work incredibly in the Jets' fortune. So you had 2 teams that were already going to the playoffs, and both decided that they really weren't going to challenge the Jets. Say what you want about the Bengals in that game. They played their starters for the first half, but they really looked like they had no intention of winning that game. And the Jets just manhandled them. So if I was a Houston Texans, I probably would have been a little bit ticked off. But nonetheless, the Jets reached the postseason when at 4-6, it looked like they had no chance. And you had, you know, Rex Ryan and Mark Sanchez now getting that valued playoff experience for a first-year head coach and a first-year quarterback. So that was huge, the Jets being able to make the playoffs in that situation. So they get the fifth seed in the AFC. So not only do they make the playoffs, but they're not the sixth seed. The Ravens are. So there's a chance that if things would have broken their way, the Jets would have actually had a home playoff game in the AFC Championship game, but that would have only meant that the Ravens had advanced there as well. I mean, it's not likely, but I'm just saying that despite looking like they were out of it, they weren't even the final seed. They were the fifth seed. So their first round of the playoffs in a wild card game, they play a rematch against the Bengals, who they just, again, manhandled the week before, 37-0. And you figure that the Bengals were going to be a little ticked off at the way that the Jets rubbed it in and be ready to play. And again, the Bengals, it's not like the Bengals had great postseason success. They had not won a postseason game since 1990. So they were going into it, you know, really hungry for, and their fans hungry for a postseason win. Well, with all that in their court, like, you know, having been buried the week before and embarrassed, Darrell Revis totally shut down Chad Johnson or Chad Ochocinco or whatever he was calling himself then. The Jets still managed to overcome an early 7-0 deficit and beat the Bengals pretty easily to advance to the divisional round against the San Diego Chargers. Now, I think most people going into that game didn't give the Bengals a huge advantage. Yes, they were at home. They had a better record. The Jets were only 9-7. But you could still make it a pretty big case for the Jets winning, especially with the way that they handled them the week before in the season finale. So that wasn't much of a surprise. But nonetheless, the Jets have their first playoff win since they defeated the Chargers in 2004 in a divisional round, in the wild card round. Well, now they get the Chargers in a divisional round, a different team with not Drew Brees as quarterback, but Phillip Rivers. And this Charger team were also AFC West champions, but they were 13-3, and they had the number two seed in the AFC, as the Colts had the number one seed. And also, the Chargers had an 8-game winning streak. So they were really playing very well at that point. And they looked, very talented. They had a great tight end in, what the heck was the tight end's name? A great tight end in, So they had a great tight end in Antonio Gates. They had Darren Sproles, Vincent Jackson, LaDainian Tomlinson. This was a very, very talented Charger team. So the Chargers, once again, get off to, like the Bengals the week before, get off to an early 7-0 lead. And it looks like they're controlling the game for most of the way. They lead 7-3 going into the fourth quarter. However, the Jets have a fourth quarter rally. And wind up defeating the Chargers. By outscoring them 14-7 in the fourth quarter, which included a Sean Green touchdown run from 53 yards out. and more missed field goals from Nate Kading, who had cost the Chargers their earlier playoff matchup against the Jets in 2004. And Kading was basically automatic heading to that game. I think he had something like 37 consecutive field goals from inside 40 yards. And in that game, he missed two field goals from inside 40 yards. So nonetheless, the Jets pull a huge upset by defeating the 13-3 Chargers. And now they are AFC Championship game bound in the rookie season of Rex Ryan as head coach and Mark Sanchez as quarterback. Okay? So now you have another team that the Jets took advantage of in the regular season, kind of ticked off to where, you know, hey, we allowed this team to get into the postseason because we decided to give up in our Week 15 matchup. Now we're going to get our revenge. Actually, it's a Week 16 matchup. But now we're going to get our revenge on the Jets and beat them like we should have beaten them in Week 16. Okay? So the Jets, to everyone's shock, start off very well. And with about 4 minutes left in the first half, have a 17-6 lead. However, in the biggest drive of the game, Peyton Manning led them down the field right before halftime to a touchdown to cut the lead to 17-13. And I think right there that changed the momentum of the game. It turns out that in the second half, the Jets kind of fall apart. They have some injuries to Thomas Jones. They can't run the ball as well. They wind up being outscored 17-0 in the second half to fall short of the Super Bowl. But nonetheless, they had a very successful first year under Rex Ryan. Okay, so year two of the Rex Ryan era started with Hard Knocks on HBO, one of the more, you know, groundbreaking shows for HBO at the time, which really went in depth in the football world to a team's training camp. And a lot of teams were vying for that. You know, now hardly anybody wants to do it. But back then, it was pretty popular. And the Jets were the it team then, okay? They played very well at the end of the season in 2009. They just missed going to the Super Bowl after having a 17-6 lead in the championship game at one point. And everybody loved Rex Ryan and this bravado that he brought to the table, you know, claiming that the Jets were going to win a Super Bowl, okay? So the other thing that started then is Darrell Revis, the best player probably the Jets ever had, he decides to hold out. And that's kind of the whole drama of this, you know, Hard Knock show. Is Revis going to come? Is he not? When is he going to sign? They make it through the entire preseason without Revis being there. They actually open season without Revis in game one. So Revis winds up actually signing with the Jets the Sunday before the season starts. He signed with them like the Sunday the week before. So if he signed with them, I believe on September 5th of 2010, the season for the Jets started September 13th. So Revis signs just in time for the regular season to start, okay? So the Jets go out against the Ravens. They lose in their season opener. Everyone's so excited, though, that this is going to be the Jets' year. And it doesn't get off to a great start, but, you know, the Ravens were good, and it still looked like the Jets were going to have a team to contend with in the AFC in 2010, all right? Revis was back. They had just a tremendous amount of confidence. And even though they lost that first game, they kind of took off from there. And they wound up starting 9-2, okay? And one of those nine wins was a very impressive 28-14 win over the New England Patriots, okay? And that was actually the week after they had lost to the Ravens. So both the Jets and the Patriots are sitting at 9-2 atop the AFC East as they get ready to prepare for a Monday night showdown in Foxborough, okay? In that game, the Patriots showed why they are the Patriots and why they have won all these AFC East titles in a row outside of 2008 and why they have Tom Brady and why they have won three Super Bowls up to that point. They absolutely embarrassed the Jets 45-3. So there's no doubt as to who the real champion is in the AFC East at that point. Okay? The Jets were kind of shell-shocked by getting beat that bad, all right? And then after the game, you had, you know, everyone saying, well, the Jets might be good, but they're not the Patriots, and in the end, they're still the same old Jets. So as a result of that game, the Patriots finished 14-2. They win the division easily. And the Jets, even though they didn't win the division and they didn't win 14 games, they still won 11 games, which for the Jets is pretty good. That actually tied for the second most wins in franchise history, and is only the fourth time in franchise history that they won as many as 11 games. Okay? So they go into the playoffs at 11-5, and they have an incredibly hard task in the playoffs, an incredibly tough task of not only winning three road playoff games to reach the Super Bowl, but most likely they're going to have to beat three quarterbacks who had at least won one Super Bowl in the wild card game facing Peyton Manning, who had won a Super Bowl, in the divisional round if things broke right playing Tom Brady, who had won three Super Bowls, and in a championship game having to play Ben Roethlisberger of the Steelers, who had won two Super Bowls. So that's the task the Jets had ahead of them. So, in the wild card round, the Jets get their revenge on the Patriots. Kind of like a revenge tour with the Patriots and with the Colts and the Patriots in the first two games. They get their revenge on the Patriots, winning 17-16 on a field goal by Nick Folk as time expired. 32-yard field goal. So they're going to now the AFC divisional game in a rematch with the Patriots, okay? The Patriots at this point think the Jets are a joke. They manhandled them when the money was on the line, and they figure, what's going to be any different now than when we played them a few weeks ago on Monday night? Well, it turns out that things were different. And the revenge theme reared its head again as the Jets seemingly humiliated by that loss earlier in the season, played perhaps the best game they've played in their franchise history outside of Super Bowl III. They wound up beating the Patriots 28-21 and defeating the hated Brady and Belichick combo. And again, it was such a big moment for the Jets that I think everyone kind of worried that, oh my gosh, are the Jets going to think that they've arrived now? They still have another game to win. But even the most negative Jet fan had a feeling of this is their time. There's just something like when the Red Sox were down 3-0 against the Yankees and came back to win those three games and got ready to play Game 7. I think even the most negative Red Sox fan was feeling confident. I think that's how Jet fans were feeling. And after beating Manning and Brady, two-thirds of the impossible chore of beating three quarterbacks who had previously won a Super Bowl, this was their time. However, they are the Jets, and things just don't naturally work out that way. So even though it was a mere impossibility to think that the Jets would overlook the AFC Championship game, that's kind of what happened. And they go in there, they get outscored 24-0 in the first half. And despite scoring 19 unanswered points in the second half, can't stop the Patriots with the game on the line with 3 minutes, 2 minutes left. Can't stop the Steelers, with the game on the line. Roethlisberger gets a pair of first downs, clinches the game, and the Steelers win the championship game. And for the second straight year, the Jets are turned away. Okay? So now you have an incredibly successful first 2 years from Ryan and Sanchez, thinking that the Jets found their franchise quarterback and they found a really exciting, good head coach who is brash, he's confident, and he has his team on the right track. All right, so I think most Jet fans at that point were confident. So 2011 starts, and then the decline begins. Okay, so what happened at the beginning of 2011 was roster changes. And what they thought were improvements to the offense. And now again, Rex Ryan was heavily involved in player personnel decisions. They decide to replace popular contributing wide receivers such as Braylon Edwards and Jericho Cotchery with guys like Plaxico Burress and Derek Mason. Didn't work out. They didn't have the same chemistry with Sanchez. But the Jets still at one point were at 8-5 and look like they can make the postseason. That is until they lose their final three games of the year in typical old, same old Jets fashion, finish 8-8 and miss the playoffs. Then the next season, they bring in Tim Tebow, who was the hero of the Broncos the year before, leading them to a playoff win, thinking that Tebow could come in and run the Wildcat with new offensive coordinator Tony Sparano. However, they didn't realize how bad of a quarterback Tebow was. The Wildcat package never worked out, and to make matters really worse, Darrelle Revis, again, the best player that ever played for the Jets, in my opinion, has a season-ending knee injury against the Dolphins, lost for most of the regular season, and a hopeful season turns into a 6-10 season. Now, the pressure's kind of on Ryan at that point. He had made a lot of these personnel decisions that did not work out. Woody Johnson is getting kind of sick at seeing the Jets go from 11-5 Super Bowl contender to now, you know, they had won 14. They had lost 14 of 32 games. They were 14-18 in 2011, 2012 under Rex Ryan. Decides to take the personnel reins from Ryan, hires a new GM in firing Mike Tannenbaum. But the thing is, he didn't bring in a GM that could talent evaluate. He brought in another GM that was a salary cap guy because the Jets were in bad salary cap space as well. Tannenbaum could have done that job, but instead they decided to go out and hire John Idzik. But the mistake was they hired him as a both personnel guy and a salary cap guy, which he wasn't a personnel guy, and everyone knew that. So Ryan gets a lot of those decisions taken away, but in turn gets put to a guy who was even worse than he was. And despite getting the Jets out of salary cap, bad salary cap position, he did a very good job at creating a lot of salary cap space. His personnel decisions were atrocious, and in John Idzik's two seasons, the Jets go 12-20 and have a slew of bad draft picks and even worse free agent signings, okay? So at the end of the 2014 season, a season which the Jets lost 8 games in a row, started 2-11, and at this point, Rex Ryan is basically, after pulling a miraculous 2013 where they went 8-8, God knows how, a great coaching job by Ryan, there's just something that was taken away from him in his personality. He was no longer brash. He was no longer had this bravado. Different kind of coach. And it kind of showed in the way the Jets had played. They didn't have that confidence. But beyond that, they were void of any type of playmakers on the team because Itzik made such poor personnel decisions. So, after the 2014 season and going 12-20 in the John Itzik era, he is fired, and in comes Mike Maccagnan as the general manager after a little bit of a search, and also Rex Ryan, who you knew was out the door anyway after the 4-12 season. He is replaced by Todd Bowles, who was the defensive coordinator of the Arizona Cardinals. So along with that, though, which was the kind of sad part of this whole thing, was the promise that started off with Mark Sanchez after having such a successful first two seasons, leading them to back-to-back AFC Championship games, he greatly regressed. So by the end of the 2012 season, the Jets decide that they want to draft a new quarterback. They draft Geno Smith, and they decide to play Sanchez in a preseason game at the end of the game behind third-string offensive linemen. Sanchez gets hurt, separates his shoulder, and that was the last play that he ever made as a New York Jet, as he never again took the field as a member of the New York Jets. They released him after the 2013 season, and a career that started off with four road playoff wins in his first 2 years, more than Drew Brees has now, was over. So great promise at the beginning of Ryan Sanchez's era ended with the same frustrating finality of no Super Bowl, no division title, and that same old confusion as to where is this organization going, what direction are we headed in, who is our franchise quarterback. None of those questions are answered when it looked like they had finally figured it out at the beginning of the Ryan and Sanchez era. We are joined once again by ESPN College Game Day's Chris Felica. Now, not only does Chris do an amazing job in researching and being the right-hand man for guys like Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit, Lee Corso on ESPN College Game Day, but Chris is also an expert in Jet history. And I really think his view on things is very unique, and he gives a great perspective. So, Chris, talking about the Rex Ryan era, and especially how it ended with how they brought in John Itzik and Rex kind of lost the ability to maneuver, maybe that he had deserved with how the Jets had fallen in 2011 and 2012 under him. But do you think that Rex got a raw deal, especially in his final two seasons with the team?
I think Rex absolutely got a raw deal. I think the biggest problem was the team kind of got gutted around him. Mark Sanchez had two pretty good, I mean, he was never a stat sheet stuffer,
right?
But he was a good player his first couple of years. And then you take away Brad Smith,
right?
And you take away his other weapons at receiver, his other
Cotchery,
you take away Braylon Edwards,
right?
You took away his guys,
right? I know.
And I think that had as much to do with the. I mean, he had some retirees on the offensive line. And I think that had as much to do with his regression as anything else. The cast around him was really deteriorated by some poor personnel moves. And I mean, Tannenbaum was there for the start of it, but then it really went south when they brought in John Itzik, who I just never understood
right.
that hire. That to me, I know a lot of people said no to the job and didn't want the spotlight in New York, and maybe there were some contingencies where if they got the job, they needed to keep Rex on because Rex had such a great relationship with Woody Johnson. But it was clear that they came in with the plan that, okay, Rex will be the coach for one more year, then I'm going to fire him and I'm going to bring in my own guy. And I think that with that first draft that Idzik had, and then he kept all those terrible draftees on the roster basically just to say, oh, I drafted nine guys and they all made the roster. I think the ill will that that guy brought to the fan base and the front office in general with him there, he was behind the eight ball from day one. And then when it was he put on that sham of a quarterback competition, which was never a quarterback competition, and they trot Mark Sanchez out there against the Giants in the fourth quarter with seven string linemen out there protecting
right.
And he has shoulder and he has a shoulder, and that was it. Okay, yeah, Geno's our guy now. Well, and Geno's a guy. I remember being 2.5 years ago on draft night, and I was not an Idzik guy because I never really understood why you fire or Mike Tannenbaum leaves. He's a salary cap guy. And then you bring in John Idzik, who was another salary cap guy.
Right.
You needed a personnel guy. You needed a scout. You needed someone with a good football background to come in.
Exactly.
And reinstill football players on that roster.
Right.
And you bring in a numbers guy who, oh, wow, yeah, he drafted Sheldon Richardson. Or he drafted Muhammad. Well, you know why he did? Because he had a pick available for getting rid of Darrell Revis. Then he had a chance to bring Darrell Revis back at a discounted price.
And he didn't do it. Nope.
And the New England Patriots do it at a discounted
right.
price. And
yep.
they win the Super Bowl with
yep.
one of the best five or six players that ever wore a Jet uniform.
Right.
All of this stuff built up. And then it was clear. And then it was real funny to see. Actually, I shouldn't say funny. I don't want to make light of someone losing their job and whatever else. But it was very interesting to see how the tone of the people who were very hard on Rex and, oh, he doesn't develop any offensive players, or they can't win the big one over Rex, making these Super Bowl guarantees and he can't deliver to. A lot of people beginning to see the real issue in the fact that John Idzik was not a very good general manager, and he did not put together a good team. And he I remember him saying, "Oh well, the 2013. It's about the two off season between 2013 and 2014. It's about that free agent class and the next year and getting draft picks for that class."
Right.
And then you go out and you have a terrible draft again.
Right.
And you sign. No defensive backs to help your terrible defense.
Right.
You don't help your quarterback situation. You bring in Chris Johnson, who is running on fumes.
Uh-huh.
It was apparent that he wasn't going to contribute. And I think it became apparent, like, oh, my God, this guy made a bunch of really bad decisions. And you know what? He's the problem. And it was really interesting to see that storyline develop. But then that mid-season head scratcher of a press conference that he had.
Oh my gosh!
I mean that was
right
there. Right,
that was right out of the Twilight Zone.
I remember sending Peter Ciccone, who you know Peter as well, lifelong Jets fan.
Yes.
At that moment, we both, I think, sent each other the same exact note at the same time. This guy is gone.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no way Woody Johnson was gonna have that guy be the face of, because if there's one thing that Woody Johnson hates more than losing, it's bad PR.
Welcome back. Breaking news in our SNY studios. The search is over for the Jets. They have found a new head coach. They have also found a new Jets GM. But first, we're going to talk about their new head coach. Moments ago, Todd Bowles will reportedly be the next head coach of the New York Jets. The former Cardinal defensive coordinator had his second interview with the Jets today. And clearly, Woody Johnson and company liked what they saw and heard. Bowles reportedly inked a four-year deal with Gangrene to be their head man. And also, the Jets named Mike Maccagnan, formerly of the Houston Texans, their next general manager. Maccagnan will share team-building duties with his head coach, but will have final say over the 53-man roster.
That is the news conference, so the breaking news that announced Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan as the new general manager and head coach of the New York Jets back in the spring, or late winter of 2015. And entering another new era for the New York Jets. So going into the 2015 season, I think a lot of people are excited, not just because of new blood, and there's always excitement when new blood comes in, but because the moves the Jets made in the offseason. The first was bringing back Darrell Revis, which was something I thought they should have done last year. They do it now. Revis has, by himself, pretty much rebuilds that secondary. But they also went out and they got Antonio Cromartie again, who was not only a fan favorite, but when he was healthy, he played pretty well with the Jets. His final year with the Jets in 2013, he had a lot of injuries, and you saw how much he could do when he was healthy in 2014 with the Cardinals while being coached on the defensive side by Todd Bowles, who was the defensive coordinator with Arizona. So you have those two in addition now in the secondary. Plus, they also got Buster Skrine, who's not, if you look at his numbers and you really watch him play, he gets beat a lot, and he's certainly not one of the top cornerbacks in the league. But he's adequate for a slot cornerback, and he's certainly better than Josh Wilson, who the Jets had last year and wasted a first-round pick on, in my opinion, back in 2010. I remember when they first drafted him and Revis held out for part of the 2010 training camp, and the Jets were getting lit up all over the place, and everyone had this worry, but then Revis came back and he signed. But anyway, so you have those moves to bolster the secondary, in addition to Marcus Gilchrist being brought in, a guy who had some success with the Chargers, and last year's number one overall pick, Calvin Pryor. Now, Pryor had a rough rookie season because he was often out there alone. Didn't really, I think, get the coaching, and that's not a fair thing, I think, to say to Rex Ryan, but I think because they were so undermanned in the secondary last year, you never really got a chance to see what Pryor could do when he was drafted. He was drafted to be a guy who was a very physical guy who was going to, you know, change the way that the Jets hit wide receivers and tight ends coming across the middle. I think he's better suited for that, obviously, with this group in the secondary with Revis and Cromartie. He can just kind of roam and hit people like he had planned to do originally when he was drafted. Not only did they bring those guys in to the secondary, but they also drafted and got the steal that everyone's talking about in the draft in Leonard Williams, who is just an absolute beast. You've seen what he can do so far in the preseason when he did play before leaving the Giants game with a bit of a nick on his knee. All he was in the backfield just about every play. Now, they're going to suffer a little bit with the 2013 Rookie of the Year from Missouri, Sheldon Richardson, with his suspension for four games, and then we still don't know if he's going to be suspended for the driving incident that he got arrested for, or the details are really kind of cloudy, but pretty sure the league is going to invoke another suspension on him after the four-game suspension. That hearing date is until early October, which is like just at the end of his four-game suspension. So I predict and assume he'll get it maybe at least another two games. Hopefully he won't get more than that. So the Jets will definitely miss him the first six games. Wilkerson's battled hamstring injuries all preseason. So this massive defensive front, which includes Snacks, Harrison in the front line, Wilkerson, Leonard Williams, Copels, though those guys, along with Richardson, that they predicted when Williams was drafted, isn't going to be seen for a little while this season. We might be looking at six games into the year before all those guys are together, again, assuming that everybody stays healthy. So that's a little bit of concern, but in drafting Williams, the Jets have some luxury there, so where they're not as desperate to get Richardson back, assuming that Williams will play like he's played in college and like he played in the preseason and that he, again, can stay injury-free. So the other area I think that the Jets were hoping to improve in the offseason was the speed on the outside linebacker. Now, they drafted Lorenzo Maldon from Louisville. He's had a pretty good camp. One of the more disappointing things that happened in camp was Ike Enenpali punching Geno Smith and then them losing him, having to release him. He was really starting to show impressive things at camp and the early days of preseason. And he was a speed guy who the Jets were counting on to be one of the edge rushers. But he's gone now. And maybe I think he was, you know, things were a bit more sunny than they were made to be true, because you really find out how guys are playing in the second, third, fourth preseason games. Everybody kind of looks good at first in training camp. And I think that's what the Bills discovered, because Rex Ryan did like this guy. And if he didn't make the Bills team, even though the Bills are really talented, then maybe there was something there that wasn't good enough. But I still think he was showing improvement, and I do think he would have made the roster on the Jets if not for that incident, which would have gave them another speed guy on the outside. But nonetheless, he's not there. And the guys that they have there, Trevor Riley and Maldon, are not exactly in that speed type of sense, even though Maldon can get out after the quarterback better than Riley can. But Riley's also a guy who is, you know, he never stops. He has an engine that just keeps on going. So there's still a bit of an unknown there. Now, the Jets released Jason Babin, so they don't have a guy who's done that in his career. So I still think that's an area of weakness for the Jets. As far as their other linebacking positions, you know, David Harris is a beast. I really like DeMario Davis. It's a guy that keeps getting better, and a really fast linebacker who probably sideline to sideline is one of the fastest and best tacklers in the league. And then you have old reliable Calvin Pace, who just seems to make the team every year, waiting for someone to come and take him over. One thing I did like that the Jets did a couple years ago was when they brought in Antoine Barnes, they had a guy that could really fly off the edge. So, you know, not having that, I think, will hurt them. I was hoping they could get somebody like that in a draft or in free agency. It didn't happen, and it still remains to be seen if Maldon, Riley, and some of the other guys that they brought in can do that. I think they're expecting Quinton Coples to have more of a pass-rushing role this year, but he has struggled, especially early on in the season, in posting sack totals. So that still remains to be seen. But I do like Coples. He's got a world of talent. And I think once these guys come back, when you have Williams, Richardson, Wilkerson, Snacks all on the field, I think that Coples will be really free to just set and go after the quarterback. So I think that this year he will have a year that he's never had before because of those advantages. Especially, I think the Jets, from the eighth game on, once they get those guys back, assuming everybody's healthy, they will be one of the best defenses in the league. So that moves to the other areas of the team. Now, there's three main areas. Obviously, everyone knows that you can't be weak in any of them, or if you are, you're going to be exposed. So we know the Jets are really strong defensively. I think special teams, Nick Folk is fine. He had one of his bet 2 years ago. He was basically the team MVP. Very consistent, a guy who inside 50 yards is just about automatic. I'm not worried about that. Punter Quigley is certainly not bad. He's not great. The Jets have never had a good punter or one of the top in the league. So I think he'll be okay. Again, punters now, you just basically got to kick the ball inside the 20 consistently. I think he can do that okay. I certainly don't think he's awful at it. So I think the Jets are okay there. As far as their punt return team and their punt cover team, their kickoff return team, their kickoff cover team, I like Devin Smith that they brought him in. When he's fully back healthy, he's going to make a difference. I like Jeremy Curley. I think Jamari Lattimore, Aaron Henderson, Jaquan Jarrett, Darren Walls, some of the wide receivers that they brought in to play on special teams, I think that they'll be fine. I think the Jets always, the last couple of years especially, covering punts, covering kickoffs, it's been a real strength of theirs. Quincy I think how you pronounce that last name, Quincy Inouye. I think he's, from what I've seen of him, he's pretty fast. He likes to play special teams. He'll need to play special teams. Now, I thought Walt Powell was really good, especially returning kicks. He's on the practice squad. There will be a point where he comes up and plays on his team. But in the meantime, the other guys the Jets have, I think, will be fine. I never really worry about the Jets' punt return team or punt cover team or kickoff cover team or kickoff return team. To me, that's always been a strength for theirs. And I think it will be this year. So special teams, I think the Jets will be fine as well. We know that they'll be fine defensively, especially when they get back and healthy. So that's left with what always seems to be the Jets' issue, is at quarterback and on offense, okay? Now, another thing I think that is important to remember is if you look at Jet history, going back, the Jets usually have success in the first year of a head coach. Starting with Parcells, the Jets were 9-7 in Parcells' first year. In 2000, in Al Groh's first year, they were 9-7 as well. In Herm Edwards' first year in 2001, they were 10-6. In Eric Mangini's first year in 2006, they were 10-6. In Rex Ryan's first year in 2009, they were 9-7. Okay. Now, in Ryan, Mangini, and Edwards' first year, the Jets made the playoffs. In Parcells and Groh's, they didn't, but they were in position to, and they still wound up with a winning record. Now, the other thing you got to remember, too, is the Jets really weren't left with the cupboard bare, especially in the Mangini and Ryan and Herm Edwards era, because they left with pretty talented rosters, which is why they did so well in that first year. Also, there's something about new blood with the Jets that seems to work well. But anyway, I remember in 2008 when Mangini was there, the Jets were 8-3 at one point and the best team in the AFC. So Ryan got a pretty talented roster. I thought Mangini got a talented roster again, especially after the draft they had that produced Mangold and DeBrincat Ferguson. So again, they weren't left bare in 2006 either. And when Herm Edwards took over in 2001, that was Parcells, Groh's guys that, you know, had started 4-0 and looked at one point, you know, at 9-4, that they were one of the better teams in the AFC as well. So, and they also had Vinny Testaverde at quarterback. And Mangini had Chad Pennington, not a healthy Chad Pennington, but a guy who was coming off injury, but you knew that if he was somewhat healthy, Pennington would be effective. And then in 2009, Rex Ryan, I think, had the hardest thing with Sanchez coming in, but the rest of the Jet team was pretty strong. So I think that this year, Maccagnan and Bolt get a similar thing with Ryan as far as quarterback being a little bit of a known known. Now, Fitzpatrick has had success. He's not a bad quarterback. He's not a disaster. He certainly is going to give you more than you think a rookie, or expecting more than you were expecting out of Sanchez as a rookie because of the experience that he has. But he's still a bit of an inconsistent factor, and he hasn't made the playoffs anywhere he's gone. He's had games where he's been a total disaster, throwing interceptions, cost his team games. So I think that's a worry for the Jets. And certainly with Geno Smith and the way he handled himself, you don't know what to expect of him either. I mean, the guy has shown, just for the fact that he got into a fight with a backup linebacker, shows that maybe mentally and mature-wise, he's not ready to take over a team and perhaps never will be. But there is hope in that area. There's hope that Fitzpatrick, with a talented wide receiving core, I like Brandon Marshall. I like Eric Decker. I think that Inua, I'm never going to say that right. I have to look up how to pronounce his name. But I think with him and with the consistent guy in Jeremy Curley that has been, I think, one of the better third down slot receivers in Jet, you know, in as far as the, you know, maybe not in Jet history, but Curley hasn't been bad. I think they'll be okay at wide receiver. I like Chris Ivory. I like Bilal Powell, and I like what I saw as Zach Stacy. So I think running back wise, they'll be fine as well. The offensive line is always kind of an inconsistent thing outside of Mangold and Ferguson. Cologne is a time bomb waiting to go off. You never know when he's going to get called for a penalty. And same with Gio Camini. You never know him either. He led the league in penalties for a right tackle last year. So that's areas of weakness. Backups, the Jets have a lot of young guys. So maybe offensive line isn't a big strength for them, but I don't think it's necessarily an area of obvious weakness either. So, but obviously for the Jets, that's their concern, is offensively, can they be consistent enough to score points? Can they be relied upon to have consistent drives that can hold the ball, keep the other offenses off the field, which you're going to need when you play the Patriots. The Dolphins are better offensively. The Bills are going to show that they can run the ball with LeSean McCoy. And some of the other teams on the Jets' schedule this year, they play the Colts and Andrew Luck. So they're going to need to be able to control the clock. I think they have the running backs to do that, but that still remains to be seen. So saying all those things, looking at the strengths of defense, I think they have a strength on special teams, the inconsistency perhaps being there on offense. If the Jets didn't finish with at least 7 wins, I would be surprised. I don't think they're a playoff team only because of the inconsistencies that they have on offense and because of the strength of the AFC East. Maybe 2 years ago, I thought that I would think that this team would be able to win and make a playoff spot, perhaps, because you figure you would have 4 wins against the Bills and the Dolphins. I think both the Bills and the Dolphins are better this year. Obviously, the Patriots are the class of the division, whether you think they're cheaters or not. They're still the best team out there. But I think it's going to be a very competitive division. I think it's going to be, you're going to have a lot of great games in the AFC. Every time each team plays each other this year, there's going to be meaning and excitement behind it. So it's going to be a really good season to be a fan in the AFC East. So saying that, I don't think the Jets are going to make the playoffs. I think at best, they'll be a 9-win team. But I don't think that's going to be enough this year to make the playoffs. Saying that, okay, if Fitzpatrick can be more consistent than he's been before, if having Marshall and Decker and if Cumberland shows up, that, you know, you always look at Cumberland and say, wow, this guy's got a lot of talent. He's fast. He has good hands. If he produces like he's capable of, if Ivory has a season where he averages 5 yards per carry and scores, you know, 10 touchdowns, if Powell and Stacy are efficient backups who, you know, average 4 or 5 yards a carry, I think the Jet team could be a 10-win team and be better than both the Bills and Dolphins. But I think those are more unknowns and unexpected to me. So knowing what I know, and that's all I can go by, I think the Jets will win no fewer than 7 games, but also no more than 9. And that's how I view the 2015 season, going into the start of the season, starting with week 1 against the Cleveland Browns. As far as week 1, I think the Jets are better than the Browns, but the Browns are another enigma. Last year, at one point, they looked like the best team in the AFC North. But I think a big thing for them is they lost their quarterback. And without Brian Hoyer, they just aren't as good as they were last year. And also, when they lost their center last year, Alex Mack, that was a big loss for them as well. But I do think the Jets are better than the Browns. I do think they'll win in week 1. But again, my prediction for the 2015 season is no less than 7 wins, no more than 9, unless they have just unbelievably consistent play from their quarterback and Fitzpatrick and Geno Smith, even when he comes back, play way above what they've played before, which could happen. But again, I'm going with what I know. So saying that, once again, we bring in Chris Felica from ESPN College Game Day. Chris, what do you think of the 2015 season? Do you think that there was the right move to bring in Maccagnan and Bowles? Are you looking forward, thinking that this will be a different era for the Jets, that finally they will overcome this same old Jet worry that these fans have? Or do you think it's going to be more of the same and it's just another, the change of the moment type thing? What's your opinion on this new regime? Paul McCartney and Wings lead us out again in this part 3 of the 2015 New York Jets season preview and team history. Thank you so much for listening. I enjoy doing this. This is a project I wanted to do for a long time. Thank you so much to Chris Felica for joining us and giving his opinion on the many topics that we talked about. I think the Jets are going in the right direction with Maccagnan and Bowles. I think that 2015 and beyond are going to be good experiences for Jet fans as opposed to the inconsistency they've seen for the last 40, 45 years. So I will leave that on a positive note. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for supporting us. CKMagicSports.com. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. Email us, CKMagicSports@gmail. And please visit our website, CKMagicSports.com. Donate if you can. Click on Knockout Cancer. Every cent you give makes a huge difference. Thank you so much. We will see you next time on Hit the Mark.
Remember to follow Mark on Facebook and Twitter at CK Magic Sports and subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes and on YouTube. To donate and support Mark and to find Mark on the web, visit CKMagicSports.com and click on Knockout Cancer. Thank you for listening.